Strike a match and watch the flames burn bright. Light up, light up. Breathe deep and let it clear your mind. When the sky feeling down, light one up as it run. Keep your chin up and head high, cause nothing's forever. Light up, light up. Breathe deep and put it in the sky.
I'm never drinking and driving, I'm only smoking and flying. Too many dying, alcohol related, that's multiplying. So you know, we gotta keep it in perspective. Get my point across like a boss and make sure that me hand that gets the message. I'm just gonna blow up on this fire. Who got that lighter? You want that sherbet, OG Kush, that cookie gets you higher. Don't need no crazy pills to give me no crazy thrills. That's just how a player feels. I'm smoking until the wheels fall off, yeah. And that's how we keep it lifted. California finest, organically and gifted. I'm in love with Mary Jane, some call it the marijuana. I'm the one you call when you need that good ganja.
Light up, light up. Strike a match and watch the flames burn bright. Light up, light up. Breathe deep and let it clear your mind. When you stop feeling down, light one up as it run. Keep your chin up and head high, cause nothing's forever. Light up, light up.
What's up, fool? That was an all-exclusive Baby Bass new song, Light Up, Light Up, featuring Baby E on vocals, Z-Ro from Houston, and Burner from, you know where he's from, man. Look that fool up. So that was a badass song, huh?
That's a tight-ass song. I like the guitar, dog.
You know, when I first heard the song, I was there at the video shoot, and I kept hearing, light up, light up. And it's a guy. I thought it was a girl, but it's a guy doing that part. It's just some skinny white boy, man.
That little hook.
You got the hook, man. You got the hook. It's going, man.
It's smooth, dog.
Man, I could just picture people hotboxing in this song, huh?
Shit. Light a joint with that joint.
I lit a joint with that joint. Yeah, man. That song hit me like a blunt object.
Blunt force trauma, raza. That shit's cool, though, man. It's a fucking sweet-ass little song, dog.
Yeah, man. That was an exclusive, people. That was Baby. We were going to play that song the last time we had Baby Bash here, but the song wasn't out yet, so now we're going to play it in the beginning just for this episode exclusively. Baby Bash's song, Fool.
Because we're out in the field. Light up, light up.
As the wheels go by. They got a good voice too. That guy Z-Ro.
That's just tight,
from Houston,
dude.
Yeah.
Who makes fucking tight ass music, dog?
Yeah, Burner too, man. I think Baby Bash know how to put people together, man. Like this big old Menudo bowl, he said.
Menudo gumbo.
Yeah.
Don't try to run. Don't try to hide.
What's up, fool? This is the first series of Cholos. Where you at now, fool? Because a lot of people, man, you know, they grew up, man, and some of them were Cholos, and a lot of fools changed their lives. You know, like Machete, right?
The transition in their lives.
Yeah, like, what is it, you know, that makes these fools, like, spark up and go, you know what, hey? It ain't about doing no more drive-bys no more.
Change directions.
Change direction, raza.
Refocus that lens, huh?
Refocus, man. Victory Outreach style.
Hell yeah, dog.
My brother was in Victory Outreach, bro, you know? And they would fast every Wednesday in East LA. And my brother Angel, he got kicked out, bro, because everybody was fasting and praying. They could smell Jack in a Box on this food, dog.
Get all the cholos for Christ.
Like that fool used he would sell chocolates for Victory Outreach, and all the money was supposed to go for the church. My brother would get that money and keep it. Some of it, you know, and get a little burger on the side.
Pocket that shit.
Imagine though, everybody's fasting and praying. You know, everybody's in together, and then, hey man, it smells like number two. Yeah, man, my brother's in TJ right now, man. He's over there trying to come back.
Getting his cleanse on.
He's over there getting his cleanse on. Yeah, so the guy that we have with is Juan Carlos Munoz. I knew that fool growing up as Goldie. He was a weirdo fool from the projects, Pico Aliso. He was in my second grade class, this dude. But I haven't seen him in a long ass time. And then one day I ran into him at Venice Beach, and he invited me over to his studio, and he was working for Angelica Houston's ex-husband, or late husband, Robert Graham. Look him up, people. Robert Graham, Mexican sculptor from Mexico. They had a big studio fool over there in Venice Beach.
You just ran into that fool random?
Randomly, bro. Randomly selected. I just ran into him. He goes, Felipe. You know, and it sounded like somebody from the projects. The way he said it, Felipe, what's up, fool?
That fool recognized you?
First? Right away, man. And I recognized his blue eyes because when you live in the projects, man, or in a neighborhood, not that many people have blue eyes, man, besides the cops. Yeah, so we're going to have a series of, because we did the last time the Hollywood Dreamers. We did the Hulk. We did the Hulk, Joe Diaz, Fred Stoller.
Hollywood Stories.
And we did the kidnap version, one the kidnaps.
Kenny and Chaps.
Kenny and Chepo.
Chibo.
And Theo.
I'm sitting there like a Southern Belle, yo.
He's over there right now chilling and shit. We're in about Ebola now. All these Liberians being in Ebola. And so we're going to have we're trying to get Miklo, bro. Damon Chapa.
Oh, that dude. That
yeah, for a Cholos series. And we're trying to get him, and we're going to try to get Puppet from Danny de la Paz.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Boulevard Nights.
We're trying to get him. And when we're doing that video, Baby Bash invited me to that video. Danny Trejo was there. And then Baby Bash told him, he's a comedian. Orale, hey, tell me a joke. So I tell him that hacky ass joke. I don't really like cocaine. I like the way it smells. Anyway, so that fool died, and he had an assistant with him, right? And he goes, "What's your number, eh?" So I give him my number. That fool had a flip phone, and then his
a razor.
His assistant was there with like a soldier. He wrote down my number. He said he'd invite me to the fights. You know, I'm thinking, man, what the fuck? It's going to be a fight, like a boxing match?
He probably has them at his house, fool.
Illegal fights?
Nah. He'd be having a couple mandingos in there, dog.
I know, man. Having a little crazy-ass fights, huh?
With Pacquiao.
Like Clean Eastwood. Like, you guys want to see a crazy-ass fucking fight? Man, fuck all this bullshit, man. Like, I'm talking about Kimbo Slice fighting. You go rent. Look for a movie with Clint Eastwood called Every Which Way But Loose.
Oh, the orangutan fool?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember Clint Eastwood? He used to have a truck, and he had an orangutan with him. And he used to just do straight-up brawling, bro. Fido was
for
his
pay,
name.
Right?
Yeah. It was crazy, man. That was like Kimbo Slice fighting, dog.
This fool, the orangutan. And what happened when that fool loses, dog?
Oh, that fool never lost, bro. He lost at the end of the, I don't want to spoil the movie, but at the end of the movie, his old lady breaks up with him and beats him up, just slaps him around, and his nose starts bleeding. So he goes into the fight already with a nose bleed. Nah, dude, I don't want to spoil the movie. You ever want to watch a crazy movie with fucking brawling? Clint Eastwood, Every Which Way But Loose. He sings the theme song, too.
I've seen that movie like 3 or 4 times in my life, but just parts.
I was a little kid, man. I remember. Right turn, Clyde, and then the orangutan was take out his arm out of the window and sock poos.
That that big ass long arm.
And then Jersey, then there was a part two, fool. Every which way you can. It was like he fought this other fool. I forgot his name. Any which way you can. And it was like the whole movie was a fight. Like a 1 hour fight. Like he fought this guy in two cities.
Did he have the orangutan in part two?
Yeah, they had the orangutan in part two, man. Clyde.
Oh, well, the fool had a beard and shit.
Yeah, man. And part two, they find him an old lady, bro.
A chick orangutan?
Yeah, chick orangutan. Oh, that fool, like, in part two, the orangutan Clyde, he has, like, a more personality now. He has fucking tranquilizers. They go to a zoo and they get him a chick, bro. And the fucking the same biker gang is chasing them.
Yeah, that's what that big old fat ugly dude. Yeah, that, back of the
every time they showed up, the spiders, bro.
That's funny movie, dog.
The old lady comes out, and the old lady from Harold and Maude, Ruth Gordon, bro.
Damn, I remember that fucking crazy ass movie, dude. Somebody was high, dog.
Yeah, it's an old ass movie, man.
It's a script about you and an orangutan, dog. And you're just gonna go fight fools for money and shit. After
that was
work.
Shit back then, man. Can you believe back then, man, that they couldn't put a Mexican in a movie, but they put an orangutan, bro? And then that was like the theme back then, like they putting animals. Because I remember BJ and the Bear, Greg Evigan. That fool had a fucking he drove a red truck with a fucking chimpanzee on the side. BJ and his best friend Bear.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, man. But that used to be a good ass show, bro. I have a white girl now, bro. Because I used to watch BJ and the Bear, bro. He's got some hot ass white chicks, bro. The Lander sisters, bro. They're like big ass titties. And I should say, man, I can give me a white chick like that, a trucker chick like that, man. A rough chick.
That's like
sacks.
Those dudes are like factory workers that go watch those fights, man. After work and bet on them, huh?
Yeah, man, but that movie was crazy, man. Like the movie starts off as a construction site, and then Clint Eastwood was just fucking fighting construction workers. And the story was that the way he fought Clyde was he fought three guys for him.
Oh, to get the orangutan?
Yeah.
That's funny, dude.
Crazy.
Even
man.
There was a movie with Charles Bronson when he was a fighter too, huh?
Yeah, that was
and that's around the 70s, right around that time, or at least
they made a pizza place after him. Hard Times.
Hard Times. Just remember Bronson.
Hard Times, bro. Was El Catrín, bro. Remember Ivan, bro?
Fighting with a little beanie on.
We used to have a friend named Ivan, and that fool was tight, man. That fool was cool, man. Like that fool, we used to hang out with him and smoke weed. And one time we were walking all high, and we saw some young ass fool come out of his house, huh? And his mom was dating some dude.
Oh, and
he just said, "Esequiones."
Wasn't that fool in high school?
No, he was in high school.
Well, junior college, first year, fool.
Who, the boyfriend or Ivan?
Nah, fool, the boyfriend, dog. We went over there one time. She made us food. And then she made that for his own little plate. Not even the shit we ate, dog.
I know, man. You got leftover lunch food.
The skulls with the aluminum.
That was tight, dog. His mom would bring in fuck.
Hot lunches,
she'll take
dog.
Hot lunches from the elementary school.
Because the cafeteria.
And we'll show up all high, just opening up fucking packages like bears. Eh?
Hey, boo. So with our little milks.
It's embarrassing how you go to your mom's house and you go, "Hey, man, you want a milk?" And she got like 1,000 of those fucking school lunches boxes that she jacked.
You got to fucking put 6 of those to make a full cup of glass.
That's what you might. I don't give a fuck, man. If your mom works at the school, they're going to fucking make fun of you every fucking day, man. Because my mom used to be a volunteer fucking nurse at Second Street Elementary. And when food would start making fun of me, like we'll start bagging each other. "What's up, man? I heard your mom brought you to school in an ambulance." Or with some of your mouth to leave bandages.
Oh, that's what it says. Estaba robando las curitas.
With some of your mouth giving fucking polio shots on the cover, eh?
Vaccines.
Yeah, it could be ruthless, man. You're a kid, motherfucker. Man, they fools make fun of you hard, dog.
Anything, dog.
You just gotta have a strong skin, raza. You can't be crying when they make fun of you, man.
It happens.
Yeah, man.
Any which way but loose.
So, man, so this is the, we're going to do the Cholo series. And we're going to find a bunch of... Oh!
Where are they now?
There's another fool also, man, that I ran into. Frankie Carrillo is a guy that I ran into, man. I was walking from fucking Atwater to the mall, Glendale, and then back. And I ran into a guy named Frankie, and that fool, he saw me when he was locked up in prison, when I was on Last Comic Standing, and he said that he was falsely accused of a murder, and he got out. Like, he was innocent all this time, and we're going to talk about him about with that. Imagine, bro, you're walking down the street one day at, excuse me, fat boy talking. You know, imagine you're walking down the street, bro, and then one day they just swoop you up. Yeah, man, you're the fat motherfucker we've been looking for, man.
It happens.
And then, it's crazy, bro. You're like, if you don't know the law, they fuck you up, huh?
Do that, resources, fucking knowledge. Like, what if you don't know your basic last rights? Man, I could have pled the fifth. Motherfucker just starts talking, dog. And fucking you start saying shit that matches their shit, and vámonos, way. Un pendejo, man, right there. They grab your ass and you're done, fool.
So we're going to have him or just sign right here. They would get you on the first 48, man. As soon as they tell you, man, just come on in this morning, man. We're going to have donuts and a couple of questions.
That's what happens, fool. You see that shit unfolding TV. Fools don't know shit, and they go, all right, I'm going to tell you what went down.
Oh, man, you know you're busted, man, when you're sitting there and you fucking have your white t-shirt over your face. When your white t-shirt is over your face on the first 48, you're pretty much fucking guilty, man.
I'll try to bust out a different voice, too, under that shirt.
Or how about that stupid ass lady on the first 48, bro? As soon as she said they were going to let her ass go, she called a murderer. No, but todo está bien.
I like it when they show the guys from they live in the neighborhood in the little apartments, and they'll show the cops barely getting there, and they got the cameras on the little apartment, and then a big old brother come down the phone around the corner in the stairs, he's like, oh shit, moonwalk back to that apartment, dog.
Moonwalk back to the apartment,
red ass outfit, dude.
But yeah, man, so that's what we're going to be doing.
Where are they now?
Where are they now? What's up, fool, with Felipe Esparza and Rodrigo Torres, they over there, Silent Bob, sleeping.
Hell yeah, dude. I want to be an orangutan, dog.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's the homework, people. We're going to go watch Clint Eastwood every which way you can and every which way but loose. And we're going to talk about that fucking movie, man. Because that movie is up there as funny as Blood In and Blood Out. Yeah, man. So what's up, fool? What's up, Rodrigo, man?
Nothing over here. Popping buttons. Some fools pop collars. I pop buttons, dog.
I saw that button going, man.
I got to keep it XL, dog. Can't go up to the 2X, man. I can't do it.
I know, man. I'm at a waist 40 right now.
Dude, bro. You wear a 2X, you're going to look like a 3X.
Bro. I know, man.
I don't want it. Nah, dude. I'd rather look tight. Double tight.
I finally found a sport that I could do laying down, bro.
Boogie boarding,
eh?
Starting a boogie boarding gang, dog.
Yeah, but my stomach getting tighter, but still fat, but it's still tight, you know.
It's moving, fool.
I'm getting better at bodyboarding. I might get sponsored by Tapatio.
You're sponsored by Tampico, dog. The whole time you thought it was orange juice, nothing but sugar water.
It was Fanta.
Fantastic.
Just right here, man. We're here at Venice Beach, ladies and gentlemen.
Lords of
Cholos,
Dogtown, right?
Where are you now, Cholos? Where are you now?
A lot of stuff started in Venice. No suicidal tendencies. Dogtown, right? The skateboard crew.
Lords, yes, of Dogtown. Yeah, man. So our guest today, man, we're introducing him right now. I grew up with this fool
in Boyle Heights.
In Boyle Heights, bro. Pico Aliso. Well, Utah Elementary.
Damn.
This fool in my second grade class
with Miss Huckabee.
With Huckabee.
Ms.
We
Huckabee?
Like the same chick.
Cecilia.
She got all fat now. Nah. I hope she's not listening. She acted like she didn't know us and shit. Yeah, so, if you guys have heard me in my other podcast where I was a guest on, I talked about how I came out of the struggle or I stopped using crack and I started doing comedy, and Father Greg Boyle was the one that helped me out. He's the one that sent me to Live Again Recovery Homes, and I came out of there, and here we are. So what's up, fool? What's up, Rodrigo?
Man, chilling right here, man. Illing out, dude. Enjoying the summertime. Not too hot. Boogie boarding a little bit, like you. Getting it down, trying to catch some waves. Is that a seal? Nah, it's me, dog.
So what's up, bro? Who you fucked up your brother? I don't know you want to talk about that.
Man, I don't know if everybody has a brother or some dudes, you know, they just have sisters. But I got a punk-ass little brother that tries to act like his dad. You know, one of those fools that live at home, 33. He yells at his mom and shit like that fool in that movie. Ma, the meatloaf! But it's more like the mole.
That's what my brother is, man. He lives with my mom, and he thinks just because we're there to pick up my mom and take her to dinner, he's supposed to go. Oh, fuck
self-entitled,
you, you
fool.
Fat piece of shit. You ain't going nowhere.
Dude, everything. And the baby's the family, too, the youngest one, dog. So he got all loose and kicked and over my computer.
My brother's like 33 years old, still getting breastfed. Oh.
So I had to set that fool straight with two rounds of natural mutual combat.
Me, I just blocked him from Facebook and Instagram.
Give him that code.
For real, man, like you talk shit about the family. You just mention something, and they show that to your mom. Like, mira que dijo Chuyito ahora.
Dude, it's like, man, and just because they're there, they feel like they're closer to your mom and closer to they're going to get on their side. It's like, what side just live, dog? Why you being a dick for? Dude,
I know,
cool,
like,
fool.
And my brother, like, a piece of shit, and his side, he's fucking, he's making friends with family member from Sinaloa that we never met.
Exactly. For what? For what?
And they're all taking his side. And no, tu hermano tiene problemas.
Ya te digo, tocayo.
So what's up, fool? We have a special guest, Juan Carlos Munoz Hernandez, Heaven, an artist that came out of the projects, Pico Aliso. What's up, fool?
¿Qué onda, cabrones?
What's up, brother?
This guy was my second grade class, man. He was a güero Mexican, man. Blue eyes.
I was getting picked on and shit.
Always, the struggle.
That's before you guys were cute, huh?
Nah, for real, man.
Back in the day, odd man.
Like,
out,
this guy used to hang around with light-skinned guys. Light-skinned black guys. That's what they're named. Vanny Pruholm. So what's up? How did you come around? You work with Robert Graham, right?
Yeah, I'm still there. I've been there for about 22 years. Yeah, yeah. Soy dueño de toda la compañía right there, you know?
How did you get started there, working there? How did you first... How were you introduced to him, man? How did you start?
Well, I, you know, of course, I, growing up there in the projects, I picked up my can at 12 years old, and remember riding the neighborhood, you know, black car right there, and going home, and my mom, she whooped the shit out of me, you know what I mean? And then she couldn't stop me, though. I kept doing it, and I was back and forth, and then got into graffiti art, and Father Greg took notice of that, and then we started doing murals, but with La Virgen de Guadalupe, and we started putting Aliso and Pico, and We Are Brothers First. I think you remember that one on Utah Street.
Yeah.
This is all with spray can?
It's all with spray paint. Always spray can. No wheat paste. Nah, no hay pedo. I don't got no pedo against that. But, yeah, and from that, I mean, it just kind of, I just grew a passion, and you know how we have roofs in the project, so I used to be on the roof, and doing my murals up there, and then my mom would go up there and she'd be like, hijo, ya está la comida, you know, come down and eat, you know, so she kind of approved of it, and then once in a while I'll see Felipe right there running around and shit. It was pretty wild. It was like the Wild Wild West in the East Side, you know.
That's when it was popping, though.
It was crazy, bro, locking,
like,
homie.
When I was like in junior high school, right there on Clarence Street, it was, they call it a Thai line, and I think they sold Thai bud.
Well,
probably. Yeah, man, it was crazy. Like, but then once they got rid of, they stopped selling marijuana there.
The new
it turned to crack, and that's when shit got crazy.
It was crazy though, because the first time when I got here, I think I was 5 years old, and I got off the.
You came from Mexico?
Yeah, Mexicali, Mexico, Baja California.
Where you born?
Mexicali.
I thought you're from Sinaloa or Sonora.
Well, no, mi familia es Sinaloa.
Your mom, right?
Sinaloa. Yeah, my mom's from Sinaloa.
I remember your mom, man. She
Camarones.
Was supposed to wear everything matching. Yeah. She had that little red beehive going.
Yeah. That's what she kept all the big the placa.
Yeah, man. Your mom and my mom were like the bosses, bro, at the Lord's Mission. Yeah, every Sunday, man, and shit, like checking. Every meeting, trying to save the projects.
Yeah, they know they put in a lot of work. I remember they had a funeral. Remember at Dolores Mission, and there were guys ready to murder everybody there, and my mom and a few other ladies. They made a human shield and walked them back to the other side. And my mom got home, man. You seen what I did? And she was all happy. I was like, Mom, what are you doing? I was drinking a 40 and shit, watching Monday Night Football game. Stupid, man.
Like, she was like Mother Teresa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mother de las madres.
Yeah, your mom was always involved, bro, like in all the Lord's mission and functions. Because my mom was always involved. Yeah. Trying to get me involved and do something, you know.
Haz algo,
cabrón. Leo un pinche libro. Read a book. That's funny. My dad would always tell me, read a book. And shit. I try to pick up one of the Mexican novels. Put that shit down.
Yeah, I remember one time we even had a barbecue down there, and they started shooting it out, bam, 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 la chingada. And my mom, she went back downstairs and kept cooking. And then the guys that were shooting, she offered them tacos, and then they started complaining about the salsa, how hot it was. So they were from, like, trying to kill somebody to complain about how fucking hot the salsa was, you know? So it was pretty cool shit.
Man, this is New York City.
Hey, what year did crack land right there in the Boyle Heights?
84, 85.
84.
84. And that's before it was getting on the national news.
Crack showed up just at the Olympics, bro, in 84.
Because you guys had that little cool little freeway right there, right?
Yeah, man. We had, to buy crack where we live was perfect because you just jump out on 4th Street and hop back on 4th Street. Let nothing happen.
Yeah, that's it. That's
what they call it, drug trafficking. There has to be traffic nearby. Hey, remember when we were kids and we were like, we were playing Little League Baseball. Do you remember right there by the Lord Mission, some fool getting stabbed? Like those, the red flag people. Remember the red flag?
Oh, yeah. Ramon, the red flag. Raymond yes. Got stabbed. He got killed.
Damon.
Or Raymond.
Yeah. Man, we were little kids. And there was communists.
They used to come, the red flag.
They used to come and protest and try to get the cholos to join the red flag. And then one day, like these fools got pissed off. I don't know if it was Flats or somebody. They were stabbing, right?
Yeah, they stabbed them to death.
And when I saw the whole, I was on my bicycle with my fucking banana bike. And I was just looking at things going like this.
In the daytime, yeah.
In the day, everything happened in the day, huh?
Yeah. I saw that fool getting stabbed, and then when I went to San Francisco, they have a big mural for him.
Yeah,
Damon something.
I remember they did a mural for him there. Some guys from Chicago, and I think fucking Pepe fucking ended up roughing him up. You know, it was just very very random. You know, yeah. Randomly selected there. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Randomly selected. That wasn't planned that he got stabbed, right?
Nah, it was just randomly. Everything was randomly there, you know?
Just everything. Snapped that day?
Because according to the communists, those red flag people, it was all set up. The police was looking for him.
Oh, no. That's because the projects, it was, you know, it was a whole different ballgame. I mean, we had 8 neighborhoods there, you know? It was not even about South Side or nothing. It was about, hey, fool, what you looking at? And that's it. You were done.
Yeah, bro. We live in like Aliso Village, Pico Aliso, Pico Garden. There was like over 8 gangs.
Yeah. Like including La Pandilla Mugrosa.
Yeah.
And that's not even a square mile right there, huh?
Yeah, man. They had like Al Capone, Primera, East Coast, fools that just showed up, started neighborhoods. There was a gang called Barrio Blanco. I don't know what it was. 40 street trying to show up one time.
38.
38.
Shit.
And yeah, after that one dude got stabbed, it was over. Those communists never went back.
They never really went back. Yeah. Yeah. But we didn't have no idea of like, not even aware or conscious of like Che Guevara or
nothing like that.
No, nothing. It was just our own shit. You know what I mean?
Those guys would have showed up in the 90s, would have been a different story, bro. They probably had 100 followers.
Oh, yeah.
The timing wasn't right.
Nah, we were too young.
Yeah, we're too young. And
I remember there was a blood that was there, and he just made, give me that red flag, man. I need it for my car. And that fool put a red flag on his
Snowman?
Car.
Snowman? And he was a white boy and shit.
There was like two white boy families in the projects. There was Snowman, Mr. Hyde. And the Mr. West on the other side.
On the Aliso?
Yeah, Lou Hazen. And there was another guy named Mr. West. He wore like a mechanic suit. He used to always go, he used to collect copper and shit.
Hey, what about that man? Remember he used to go, Pico de Gallo, Pico de Gallo. He used to show up right there on Clarence Street.
He used to be a guy in a fruit truck. He used to sell fruit cocktails. And like, he'll tell you $5, but you gotta bring your own bowl. So this boy have a big old bucket full of pepinos, mangoes, fruit cocktail. Then you bring your own plate and he'll make it for you.
And never got jacked. Never.
He never got jacked. Only got... one time, mom, this fool.
Oh, shit.
No, this one time, this fool, Vicente, that fool fucking took his food stamps.
Oh,
and he gave them to me. He had like $200 in food stamps, but he was afraid to tell his mom, so I kept them. So all day, that's when I first learned about money laundering. We're buying 5 cent gums just to get the 95 cents. So all day, I was sending kids there for a potato chip. Give me the change, fool. What you want, a soda? Or give me the change.
Oh,
so you started, man. You met Father Greg. Were you doing bad at one time? Because I got into rehab like in 91. I was 22 yeah, when I got into rehab.
Yeah.
I disappeared, bro. I never looked back. I got into a big fight, actually, what happened in other projects.
Oh,
and
okay.
I thought that I wasn't going to make it out alive.
Yeah, that's kind of similar to what happened to me. You know, I got heavy into drugs myself. And then my jefita sent me to Mexicali. So I think I weighed like 110 pounds or something when I got over there. And when I got over, I mean, man, you talk about eating like camarones, ceviche. They were feeding me, bro. Boom, boom. And then I came back over here. And the first day I got here, fucking Blue sees me. He puts a gun in my hand. What's up, fool? You know, remember me? Because a year before, you know, yeah. I was like the homie said, I was living in his head rent-free and shit for a whole year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Couldn't let go. So, I just got back. But one thing I do want to mention, because when I was out there dealing, I show up to the pad and my mom was like, hey, are you dealing? And I said, yeah. I go, she goes, are you dealing coke? I go, yeah. She goes, why? And I go, because I want to move you out of the projects. I want to buy you a house somewhere in Pasadena over there. You know what I mean? And she said, you know what? I'd rather die on my knees than for you to be killing your own people and stuff. And that is kind of like, it was like the Holy Spirit just like boom. And then at the same time, like, you know, my good friends were dying, like Flaco and everybody. You know, remember we lost like 26 friends in one summer? Like everybody that knew each other. And it was just devastating for me. I mean, like, went through, like, suicidal thoughts and all that crazy stuff, right?
Remember the last time we saw each other, we were talking, and you had said that you were at the Ali River bummed out.
Oh, yeah,
and you had cash, and you had a lot of cash. You had dope, and that was, you didn't care no more. Like, you didn't even smoke crack before.
Yeah, yeah, no, I had all this cash. I had, like, over maybe $2,000, $3,000. And then I had all this
3 hours work.
I had all this yeah, you on me.
Nobody had
me. And then I saw this brother, man, big old dude pushing three G's on me and I was like 16 years old. I was a little fucking mocoso, you know. And I saw this brother, he was pushing a cart and I go, yo, you know, big ass dude, man, big ass like 6'4". And I go, hey man, could you go get me a 40? And he goes, yeah. And then I brought out the wob of money. And I brought a 20, and he went and got me a 40, came back a half hour later, and he gave me my change back, and he went about his business. And then I showed up at Cuatro, and my lips were all chapped up, and I saw BB and shit. BB was like, dang, you look kind of funny, fool. And I was like, what are you talking about, you know? But, yeah, those were the crazy dark days, you know?
Lips were all chapped and shit.
Yeah, all chapped.
But it's raining outside.
Yeah, so I could, you know, and then, you know, I got into more and more. I mean, graffiti art had never left me, you know. When I got introduced to it through, I believe it's through seeing one of those documentaries, you know. So I think it was Star Wars and
Wild
stuff.
Wild style,
Star Wars, breakdancing, that whole hip hop. And then we used to go to the Radiotron right there by El Piojito, right there by MacArthur Park.
That was the train was, right? It's an apartment building now, right?
Yeah, it's like a little...
Lucas?
I think so. Yeah. I'm not too sure what the exact address is, but they end up... It was funny because we had the Radiotron, and then they end up knocking that down, and then everybody that kind of was involved with the Radiotron kind of got into neighborhoods, you know, and then that whole crack epidemic started in the neighborhood, and then there was like, I think like that year or a year later, there was like... Or 3 years later, I believe, there was like 860-something murders in L.A., all gang-related.
Tiger started gangbanging.
Yeah. You know, we had all this energy. We just didn't know where to put it, you know. And But, you know, then Father Gray came in, you know. Father Gray came in, and he started helping everybody, man, you know.
Everybody.
Everybody. And he started buying me spray paint, and the first mural was right there on, I believe it was on 1st and Clarence. Yeah, where I did...
I thought about the store.
Where the 99 cent store is that? Yeah. Yeah, we had the Virgen Guadalupe. We put an aliso. And then I put like a needle saying, don't do it. So then I became conscious, started like feeling what conscious was, you know what I mean? Because we didn't have any conscious growing up.
And expressing it in your art?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, yeah, you know, and always trying to like keep it. So instead of like graffiti art, like doing letters, we were kind of following kind of like what the Chicanos were doing back then, but not really, because they were doing something else. And we never went to school for it, so we're just kind of learning, you know, within ourselves, and even with Fabian Deborah, you know. Yeah. And then Alex Kiesel was helping me out, and I remember my mom going to King Taco and buying us tacos, and here, hijo, tiene hambre, and I was like, yeah, you know. And it was kind of risky though at the same time, because it was still on and popping, but you know, I believe that art kind of put a shield, a positive shield around me to protect me from all the negativity, you know. And then after that, we did a mural for Dolores Mission Alternative. And then at that time, during that time, I remember my friend Alex, he got shot in the head. And he survived. And it was funny because they were saying my own friends did it, but he didn't really take it personal. And then he showed up trying to steal our cans after he came out of the hospital. it was pretty bizarre. That was a good mural. That was I was really impressed with that mural, because we kind of went like we did some Aztec kind of symbolism in it and kind of like going into our culture and stuff. And then you remember the homeboy mural as well, the Tortilleria. Yeah. That was a pretty cool one too. During that time, that was when the peace treaty started.
Yeah,
remember everybody was going head up, and it was pretty wild. But you know, they put the guns down at that time.
Because I remember one time I was coming out of I think when I was out of rehab, and it was like I was just kicking back at the Ronald Eno's house, the Indians. Ronnie Eno's.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
Eno's
yeah,
house.
Yeah, yeah.
We were just sitting there with their nephews. And then all of a sudden, there was fools on top of the apartments from Pico Aliso.
Yeah.
On top of the apartments.
And the roofs.
Down at First Playground.
Damn.
And the people from the First Playground were shooting at them.
Damn.
And I said, damn, shit got crazy when you come out of rehab.
Oh, yeah.
And these fools are shooting in the daytime. Like
yeah, daytime.
Beirut style.
Nah, it was pretty wild, man. I'm just, you know, it was pretty wild. It was pretty wild. And it saved our lives. You know, your art form and my art form, and it was a good thing that we got introduced to laughing and spray paint and a brush. You know,
yeah. Man, I started doing stand up comedy. I would do jokes like about there's nothing good about gang banging except that they all carpool. They're like, come on, homie, let's all get shot. Come on, homie, let's all get arrested.
Right.
So you were your brother, right? Your brother?
Yeah, my brother Alfonso.
Alfonso
Red. Yes, Red. We're like the only two
güeros
in the projects, you know, apart from the real güeros that were there.
You're noticeable when you look like this guy in a project. They know who you are, right? Goldie. Don't they call you right, Goldie?
Goldie, yeah, Goldie. Goldie. I had Goldie because I used to wear a lot of gold chains, you know. I was into Mr. T at that time and shit.
I pity the fool.
Yeah.
Stay in school, fool. That's when everybody had white gold, remember?
Yeah, white gold and shit. That was funny, man.
It was cool, man, to have like a bunch of gold rings, a gold chain, and a nice boom box with Keith Sweat.
Yeah.
Making it happen, dog. And at the whole time, it's going crazy right there in Boyle Heights and shit. And
not in the news, by the way. Never in the news.
It was after, right? Like 88. So you guys are already, it's already cracking for 4 or 5 years before it even gets
on national
TV. It
got even crazier after 88.
Yeah, well, after, because it was, everything was kind of cool, but not really, because everybody was into PCP. That's the way I explained everything. It was a PCP epidemic, so everybody was kind of cool, you know what I mean?
Too high to fucking
Too many Walking Dead.
Well, yeah, these fools used to take all their clothes and run around naked and fall from their mouth and shit. Remember that shit?
I was at a little league game, and then, like, my head coach's best friend jumps out of the dugout.
Ta-da!
He said, free! Free! I'm fucking free! And he takes off his clothes, and he starts running around the field butt naked.
Home run.
Home run. I'm watching this going, damn, Larry's crazy. Larry Santos.
Yeah, it's crazy because that's what we saw as little kids, and it's like, damn, really? You know what I mean? It's going to have to go through you somewhere or another. You know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute. And it doesn't come back to later on, and that's why I think that's why you start abusing all this other stuff, you know? Just kind of numb yourself from all that crazy shit.
Hell yeah, man. Remember, did you ever like go swimming at the swimming pool and that shit closed?
I remember one time I went swimming. I was on acid. And somebody had took a big old pedazo de mierda right there, bro.
On the swimming pool?
On the swimming pool, 9 feet. And I was like, damn, dude. Really? And then we got me and my compadre Ariel?
Yeah.
We were like, what? And we were like, nah, that's too crazy, man, you know. But yeah, they remember that mother that went in there, and she was on a frío too, I think, pobrecita, and she ended up dying with her two kids. It was pretty effed up, you know.
My brother Fernando was there. He ended up jumping in there to try to rescue them.
He did?
Him and some fool named Jose.
Oh, shit.
My gay brother, bro. He went in there, held his breath, went all the way in there, brought that fool out.
Yeah. Damn. So it was at midnight or what
time?
It was
at nighttime. Late swimming.
Late swimming. Yeah, that's where you get
After hours.
It's only like, once the lifeguards left, it's only like some fat cholo, the burrito man will bust out bow cutters. Yeah. For real, therefore we'll take out bow cutters out of his sweats. Remember, he'll just cut the lock.
Click, click, click.
And everybody starts jumping, barbecuing, jumping off the roof. It turned into like, remember when they let the employees use the swimming pool in that movie Caddyshack? That's how buck wild it got, dog.
Pandemonium.
No, it was wild, man. It was like, you know, it was like that whole PCP era. And then when the crack epidemic hit, it was just like, damn.
Fool, when that movie The Warriors came out, the next day, 10 gangs were formed in the neighborhood.
The impact of cinema.
Remember Boulevard Nights? Boulevard Nights. Remember they it was right there at Dolores Mission. ¿Te acuerdas?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty wild too, man. That was pretty crazy stuff.
So Father Greg Boyle was noticing your art? And
yeah, he was noticing my art. He was like grabbing his beer. He was like, oh, what did, you know, trip out on this, you know? Like, oh, shit, you know? And then you want to paint another mural? And then I started calling the homies up. Hey, you guys want to do a mural? And we got, like, we had some like crazy ass scaffolding, kind of like falling apart scaffolding, and we would use them. But, you know, we're young and we're just ready to rock and roll, you know? That was in 91, I think I did that education for the younger generation. And Tempt helped me out on that one. It was Hyde, Tempt, Deffer, Mosco, and Jack. And it was kind of cool because it was like, you know, it was in Cuatro's neighborhood, but, it, you know, it was cool. They didn't sweat us. I think because of Pepe, you know. Pepe, like, no, that's my cuñado, so.
Pepe was crazy, man. That fool was crazy.
El Charro Negro.
That fool was crazy. Pepe, like the last stoner, bro. And that fool still has long hair and still has a Levi jacket right now.
Yeah.
That fool went into the tie line and he got surrounded by a bunch of people and they asked him, where you from? Pico Stoners. Give me that bike. And he gave it to them and just walked away.
I remember that.
I'm watching that going, damn. This fool got a lot of heart. But no.
Yeah, so I was doing that mural there. And then Manuel Guerrero from remember the Gang Youth Service? And then he started taking boxing gloves to different neighborhoods. Hey, you got a beef with that person. And whatnot, here, you know, ponte los guantes, that's an amare, cabrones, you know. So anyhow, he goes, hey, man, they're hiring, you know. That was after the L.A. riots. And Robert Graham here in Venice, he reached out to, like, he wanted to reach out to to like seven youth or around LA, around the
give me the whitest looking ones.
Well, at the beginning, I think at the beginning he was gonna get like students from art schools, and he was like, nah, I don't want, you know, I want to give me some
street flavor, or what?
Street flavor.
I want some street cred here.
And yeah, you know, so we show up, and there was like 30 guys there that he interviewed, and he picked seven of us, and he made us sculpt a ball, like a sphere, out of clay. And 2 weeks later, he calls me. He calls me up, and I'm here in Venice. I'm here in Venice. And
catching buses.
Catching buses.
Like
catching
a soldier. Buses.
Yeah, and then I
how long was that bus ride, bro? So what time did you fucking get up to go over there?
Oh, man. You know, at that time, I had the Maxima. You know what I mean? So I was driving. But then, I split over with my lady. Then I moved in with my mom, and then my mom passed away. A year later, she passed away, and then they knocked the projects down.
Oh, damn.
And then I came to Venice, and I was homeless in Venice for about 2-3 weeks, sleeping in cars. And
I swear, dude, I didn't see you out here when you were homeless, but I did see that one dude that grew up in a project that's called, he was like a dark hair and long hair.
Oh, shit.
Chooms. They call him the Chooms. He lived right next to George. He lived right next to Güero. Remember Güero?
Rafa?
Güero and George?
Yeah. Güero and them, yeah.
Yeah, he lived right next to Güero.
French Fry. Yeah.
Well, the guy that lived right next to him, I saw him in Venice Beach homeless. He was walking all crazy, and he looked at me and goes, oh, shit, what's up, Batman? And then he walked away acting crazy.
Oh, shit.
The Chooms.
Yeah, I used to see Sugar over here. Remember Sugar? Hector?
Hector?
Hector, he lived up the hill. Yeah, you called him Sugar. Yeah, he used to see him over here, but... Then I started creeping up to Robert Graham's studio and taking a shower at his studio without him noticing. So I kind of was creeping in there, taking a shower, and then going out working at his studio. Everybody will leave, and then I'll creep in there again. And then my friend Valentin took me in. I lived in his pad and on here in 4th and Vernon. Then my friend Ricky Mejia moved in with him at on Millwood. And then from Millwood, I moved to Sunset, 608, and that was pretty wild. And then from Sunset, I moved in here to this studio with my lady. And then I kept doing all these projects with Robert Graham. You know, I did the Duke Ellington in New York and the FDR in Washington, D.C. But the one that was crazy was the FDR in Washington, D.C., because I was supposed to meet Clinton, the president at the time. And I get off the airplane. And FBI pulls me over. Like, as soon as they get off the airplane, they pull me over, and they're like, yo. I go, what's up?
Yo, Blue sent us.
They go, you know what? Check it out, man. You fit the description of a 187 murder. And I was like, what? Dude, I'm going to go meet the president. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Fucking, and then it would,
well,
you know,
I passed clearance.
And then it was like, dude, do you have an ID? And I didn't have an ID, because I was just...
Damn,
I was
kind I got of, my I didn't bus have pass. A,
no, I had my green card. I had my green card at the time, you know, and my bus pass.
Mimica.
La Mica. Entonces, but after like 15, 20 minutes of interrogation, they cleared me. And the night before, this cop had got killed.
Here in L.A.?
No, in Washington, D.C. But I looked at the guys that did it. I didn't fit the description. I was just randomly
selected.
Yeah, it was so great just working with Robert Graham and meeting his family and
Robert Graham, Mexican?
And Mexicano, Americano, and I learned a lot of discipline from him, so much discipline, and I'm just grateful to still be there. You know, we're not here in Venice anymore. Actually, we moved to Culver City, so now we're in Culver City. We have a new studio. It's still not up and running yet, but we're gonna get it up and running pretty soon.
So you do sculptures now?
I do sculptures. I do abstract graffiti, contemporary sculptures, and my paintings, you know. And, you know, I don't really like to say too much in my sculptures or my paintings just because, you know, a lot of people say a lot of fucked up shit in their vocabulary, you know. So I just kind of want to keep it cool, you know. You know, so yeah, so now I'm like 21 years later, 22 years later. You know, I'm still here in Venice and working in Culver City, and I live over here now on the West Side. So I went from the LA River to the projects, to Boyle Heights, to here, to working here. You know, And I love it over here. I love the beach. One time I got a little ill. I couldn't really breathe, and I went to the ocean, and I feel like I got healed and stuff. So,
I love Venice, man. I've been coming here now for about a month, trying to body surf.
Como la foca.
Yeah, dude. Like, I've been coming here. I've been here like this week. I've been here three times.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
There. I get here like around 9:30 when nobody's here.
Yeah.
And like, if I'm here before that stupid guy with the guitar is here, I'm happy.
Bro. Oh, okay. Q-tip. We call him Q-tip.
Yeah.
Same song. No sé qué. I mean,
hey, fool. This fool knows what's his name. He knows that black fool. The one that he kept saying, man. He always came up to me. Man, your friend works over there, man. Your friend. Your friend, man. You're your friend, man. Goldie. Heaven.
Who's that?
G. Riley. He's some black fool that lives on a boat. He talks to
Marino Del Rey.
He talks to right here on Venice.
Because he like walks or jogs the beach, right?
Ah, cabrón.
He goes, there's so many of them here.
Yeah. A light-skinned brother with a goatee. I think
he's a comedian, too. Riley.
Yo, what's going on, man?
All right.
New York.
Yeah, that's exactly the way he talks. He's not exactly.
It's not Brooklyn Glass. Broken Glass.
Oh, no. Not Broken Glass.
So now living here in Venice, man, are you part of the Venice community? Like, they know you? You know everybody here?
Somewhat. But Venice is changing so much, man. I feel there's so much of a separation. You know, you got these fools that are moving in, that their company is worth $10 billion. And yet, you go down the street and you see these homeless people that are just in shock because, you know, nobody's trying to help them and stuff. Like, you know, so it's like the homeless people that I knew before, like I knew like Tommy right here. Fuck,
don't they call it now, right? Silicon Beach now. Right?
Silicon Beach. Yeah. But you had all these bohemians before, you know. You had like these mad intellectual homeless people that they wanted to be homeless because of society, but they're very intellectual geniuses, like Ralph, and he was born in a military base, and you could ask him anything about chemistry, and he would tell you off the top, and musicians, and
Heisenberg.
También ese güey. You know?
So you started working with him, and you started learning from him, because I don't remember you sculpting. I remember, like, you tagging, like, with Charlie.
Yeah, with tu cuñado, el cuñado.
Mi cuñado, man.
El cuñado with Charlie, remember, Stress.
So when you were, like, hanging out with Stress and Charlie and Flu in the beginning,
yeah,
and the other guy, Rebel, the one that got shot.
Yeah.
You already had stopped then.
Well, I mean, you never. What do you mean stop? Like
stop slanging and all that.
Yeah, but you're still like.
On alert.
It's not even like seven friends away. You're like one friend away from that. Because,
yeah.
I mean, even that day when Reem got shot, you know, he was at my house at 3 in the morning. He was like, hey, man, I'm going to. Can I use the restroom? Him and Flu showed up to my house. Can I use the restroom? I go, yeah, of course, man. Use the restroom. And then, bam. And then he was the first person that got shot with an AK-47 in the projects, you know. After that, that's when, like, the caliber kind of went up.
I know, man. That was the loudest gun I ever heard.
Yeah, that was. And Charlie was there. Charlie was there.
Cuerno de Chivo, right?
Cuerno de Chivo, yeah. Yeah, so all that stuff, man, is pretty damn disturbing, you know. Pretty fucked up. You know, it's unfortunate that all those things happen, and at the same time, is like I appreciate life even more just because of that. But not just because of that, but just because, you know, there's all this other stuff going on around the world right now, and you know, you just kind of wake up and you're like, damn, I could breathe. You know, I can see, I can hear. You know what I mean? And if I could do more than that, then I'm a winner that day. You know, a little bit. You know.
That's nuts, dude. And as far as when you start getting into sculpting, after you met Robert Graham out?
Yeah, I mean, I was, when I worked with them, I didn't really take it serious, you know, because I was more into graffiti art. But then it took me a few years to kind of really take it serious. So I say like it took me like 5 years to like really start like getting into it and appreciating it and then started having a passion for it. And now it came to a point where I paint, I feel like I'm sculpting. And when I sculpting, I feel like I'm painting, you know. And so I go back and forth. And then I also work with youth. We with Alex Keys, we work here at Santa Monica. Did a few murals there with the PYFC, the Pico Family Youth Center, and then also at Virginia Park. Yeah, so it's been a cool journey, and then to see my brother right here, Felipe.
What's up, fool?
Fucking, I remember when he fucking won the fucking
Last Comic Standing.
Last Comic Standing, I know, and I threw the fucking remote control. It fucking broke because I thought homie was gonna lose. You know what I mean?
I thought he was gonna get second place.
I was like, fuck yeah, you know. And you were not randomly selected there. You know what I mean? You actually won that motherfucker. You know what I mean? So it was cool. So a lot of good stuff's happening right now. You know, as far as like our lives, kind of, you know, getting better. You know, it's a good progreso, you know what I mean? Es un progreso que viene del oscuro, you know? And I think it's a good thing.
And I see, like, as far as graffiti art, I'm looking at some of the work that you have here in your studio. You still keep the vibrant colors, the spray can colors.
Yeah, you know, I want to use...
blends.
Well, también eso, pero también I want to use good colors that'll last, you know, good 20, 50 years, you know, so... You know, like right here, you know, you have the sun hitting it sometimes, and so I'm trying to put the shade down, so it could just held as a thing for a very long time, you know. Sus cajones for a long time, you know.
Yeah, dude.
So now what you doing now, man? You doing a documentary now?
I met a good friend, Rodrigo.
Me too.
El Tocayo. Los Tocayos. R&R. And I would like to pass the microphone to him so he could explain to you of what was going on and what's going down. And aquí está Rodrigo.
What's up, Rodrigo Torres? No.
That's me. What's up, Rodrigo?
Do I need to use this?
If you want, yeah, put them on. That way you can get the whole feel of listening.
You can listen.
What's up, Rodrigo? What's your last name, brother?
Rivera de Ebre.
Rodrigo Rivera de Ebre. What's up, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
Chilling, man.
All the way from Lenox.
The Big L.
The Big L.
Big Lenox.
Home of the Mariscos.
Yeah, little TJ. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Home of Aguas Chiles.
Mariscos Money?
Yeah, that's a place out there with a big ass gate. Yeah, I've been there.
I do pest control with Mondo Cosillo. Hey, what's going on? You have a little pest control company. We do that place, Mariscos Money. The original small little place and now that bigger place in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know that dude right there.
Great.
They don't have roaches, though. They're under control.
Right on.
So what is this documentary based on? Is it all based on Juan Carlos or you have a group of people?
Well, actually, the film is called Dark Progressivism on Rupture and Rebellion. We have a lot of artists on board. So it covers what we like to call a Los Angeles nativist tradition in art. We have writers, graffiti artists, musicians, calligraphers, who else? I guess we have big names like Chaz Bojorquez, Juan Carlos Munoz. We have Defer, Prime, Big Sleeves. Just a whole bunch of people from Los Angeles. We have an award-winning Pulitzer Prize journalist and writer, Hector Tobar, if you guys are familiar with him. Did The Tattooed Soldier. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage on the 92 riots.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, then we have a Professor Orozco from Whittier College, Roberto Gutierrez. There's a lot of different people, a lot of really good people.
How long have you guys been working on this for?
We've been doing it for the past maybe 2 months.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we're halfway done with all the interviews. We've been doing some editing for the past few weeks. So we resume shooting maybe the first couple of weeks of September. And then we'll have to edit that and then submit it to Sundance Film Festival late September.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
How'd you get into the documentary? What made you want to do it?
Interestingly, I was hanging out with some friends, some tattooers, Uglar Works, and we were talking about doing a possible exhibition on murals at LACMA or MOCA. And over several of these conversations, we started talking about possibly doing a documentary. So then I just started having all these different ideas. I started talking to people about it. And then I came across some people, some friends of mine in the film industry, and I pitched the idea to them. Not really thinking they were going to accept it. You know, I just kind of threw it out there, see what I was working on. And they liked it. They introduced me to a producer, and the producer liked it as well. So he came on board, and then we just started moving forward since then.
So when is going to get released?
Well, that all depends on distribution. So we're hoping that if it gets picked up after Sundance, then we should be able to secure a deal there. But that's that film part of it. You'd have to ask my producer.
the guy with the money.
Yeah.
James Yee, where are you?
Mr. A.K.A. Deep Pockets.
Where you from, though, Rodrigo? Where you from?
Where you from, Holmes?
Where you from, homie?
Yeah, well, I grew up
in here making documentaries and shit. Yeah.
Who are you, dog?
Well, I grew up in Lenox.
All right.
Yeah, born and raised right there?
Well, I was born in West L.A.
Okay.
I think UCLA, if I recall.
Does your mom say, woot, woot, woot? Woot, 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 woot. That's like an Englewood thing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, and then we lived here in Venice for, and Mar Vista, maybe for like 5 years. And then my parents bought a house in Lenox. And then we moved to Lenox back in maybe 1980.
Oh,
right
damn.
Around then.
And Lenox pretty crazy itself right there, right? That little patch?
Yeah. Yeah, little barrio. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Growing up, on my block, there was a lot of dudes from 18th Street, damn. Culver City, Lenox, Street Rascals.
And Border Brothers.
Yeah, a bunch of paisas.
We did. We used to do stand-up comedy in Downey before, in Cudahy. It's a Denny's now. It's because of Daily Planet.
Oh, yeah, I remember Daily Planet. Yeah, I used to go there.
We did stand-up comedy there on Tuesday nights and Club Garabilde in Cudahy.
Plaza Garibaldi, right?
Garibaldi. Plaza Garibaldi.
Yeah, that was a mean-ass
garlic shrimp. There used to be a Filipino lady with a boob job, and she used to always go like this. She used to shake her pie gal dice at this. She was like, come on, pie gal, silicone, silicone. And then throw it down, dude.
Dude, what do you think paid for that shit? How'd you hook up with Munoz?
Well, it was interesting. I had heard about him through David Braffman from the Getty Research Institute and Ed Sweeney, who is a big art collector. And they both had been mentioning a guy named Heaven from K2S. And I didn't know Heaven was Juan Carlos Munoz Hernandez. And I had already met Defer and Big Sleeps and Prime. And some of those guys had mentioned the name Heaven, but I had no idea who he was. And then one day we were at a 1984 Olympics reunion committee. And Isabel Rojas Williams, who is the executive director of the MCLA, she introduced us. And so he knew who I was and I knew who he was. And so we just hit it off since then. And then we started talking, and then we asked him to be a part of the documentary. So we came by here. We interviewed him here, and we've been kind of hanging out ever since.
Hell yeah, dude.
That artist Prime, that's that famous tiger, huh? Prime?
Yeah. Yeah, Prime. Jose Prime.
Yeah.
Ressa is his last name.
He was tagging with Chaka, huh?
No, no, Chaka was after. But he was tagging with Gio. These are the guys that kind of grew up in Pico Union area.
They grew up in Prime, the Pico
Prime and Prime and Gio and
Sign. Yeah, Pico Union.
I remember I used to see Prime all the time, everywhere, and then Chaka too.
Oh, Chaka.
Yeah, Chaka and so dude Sleaze. I used to always see Sleaze, Cab.
I used to write Spit.
Oh, you're that guy, right? We've been looking for you.
I remember somebody crossed Coco. Coco did a graffiti right there on First Playground, and he just did a Kango. I don't know if you were there with green spray. I was with him. He did two. Yeah, with Baby James. He did a Kango, and then the next day somebody crossed it out, and then somebody wrote Spit on the bottom. But you know who crossed it out? It was Ruby from Flats.
Oh,
Ruby, that motherfucking, that fool used to stutter, man. I remember that fool had a parrot. I said, what happened, bro? The parrot teach you how to talk or what? Shut the fuck, Holmes.
Tartamudo.
So you grew up, man. So you're like, how old are you? You're like our age, huh?
38.
Oh, the perfect age. I was saying, this fool moved in 1980. How old was he?
And what's your background prior to the documentary?
I'm Mexican.
Well, I'm actually, I write books. So I'm a literature guy.
Oh, yeah.
I write fiction, nonfiction, essays, short stories, novels.
You have any books out there that people go listen to, look for them?
I do. My first book was Urban Politics, The Political Culture of Sur 13 Gangs, which is basically a juxtaposition between street gangs and public administration. I wrote it straight out of college. I wrote it back in 2005. After that, I wrote a book called The NAFTA Blueprint, which is a political conspiracy thriller that looks at the North American Free Trade Agreement.
During then, Clinton's time, huh, when they sealed it?
Yeah, but mine looks more at maybe, do you know the Trans-Texas Corridor?
The whole pipeline thing?
Yeah, no, it was more like the 14-lane corridors.
The freeway thing for the trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's that.
And people say they don't exist, but it does.
Yeah, exactly. Hence the conspiracy.
What doesn't exist?
Yeah, and then my most recent book, Grave Situation, it came out about a month ago. And that's a psychological thriller. It takes place mostly in Santiago, Chile. I used to live there, so I wrote it when I was living there. And it's basically a dark tale of obsession, revenge, and murder.
Yeah, dude. Check out the Tocayo.
What's up, Tocayo? Writing horror books from Lennox.
Who you think you're messing with, Joey Bananas?
So you went to USC?
No, actually, I went to Cal State LA.
Orale.
But I'm trying to get into USC now to do the graduate degree.
Hell yeah.
My drug dealer went to Cal State. I had to meet him at his dorm.
They're off of Easter.
Easter, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
<That's> right.
Yeah, I know that guy too.
So this is your first documentary or you've done others?
This is my first one.
Your first film?
Yeah.
All right.
It's my, I guess, directorial debut. I didn't know how to go about doing it. I just started talking about it. And then when I started meeting these film people, they really liked the idea. So at first it was a little bit difficult as far as directing and editing and so forth. But now it's been going a lot smoother and it's become a really fun process. So I'm really enjoying it.
For you listeners out there, he's doing it, right? Not like we're going to do this movie and we're going to talk about it for 10 years and not do it.
Just do it, like Nike said.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely have a deadline, and we have to get it done by October the 1st.
All my friends had deadline, man. They would have been shot already for not doing that movie.
Yeah. These moonlighters.
Yeah, man, I got to write this script. I'm gonna put you in it. But then you get it, and no words are in it.
I think you can put your jokes in there.
So you have brothers and sisters? They're all in the business?
Nah. Nah.
What brought you into the arts and not other people from the hood?
Well, that's interesting.
Did you like drawing when you were a kid? Because I don't remember Munoz ever drawing anything.
It's all here, dog.
I used to write poetry when I was a kid.
Shots.
I started writing poetry, like back when, I don't know, elementary school.
The Cholo walking down the street.
Yeah, I was into like the Smiths and Joy Division.
Oh shit!
All that depressive music, and
that's beautiful music, dog.
Yeah, it is. It is, but it's beautiful and depressive at the same time.
Era rebelde.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. When I got shot in '92, I was wearing a Meet His Murder T-shirt, and when I got to the hospital, the doctor saw me wearing the Meet His Murder T-shirt, and he said, "What are you, some vegetarian gangster?" And it was, yeah. We all started laughing. It was the most hilarious thing I'd ever heard.
Is it really so strange?
Yeah, exactly. So that actually influenced me to write poetry.
Hell yeah!
Listening to all that music. Yeah.
We all like the director.
Why did you get shot, though?
You know, hanging out with the homies.
Oh, you were hanging out with the homies. Okay, yeah. I thought
guilty
you were over there.
Association.
Yeah. Wrong place at the wrong time. And
that's funny. I used to have a joke like that about people always talk about when they get shot. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time. How about that bullet? It had to hit somebody. You were there.
Yeah.
The bullet was on a mission. Sorry.
Hey, what makes me laugh is when they say that the guy that got busted was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
That fool did it, dog.
Now you're at the right place at the right time.
Well, that led me to writing. Like, I used to write music, underground lyricism, like rap stuff. You know, hanging out with the guys, being in the hood and so forth. I was into rap music and underground lyricism and eventually, I got bored with it because I didn't feel that it was going to take me any further than just, the egotism of rapping that way. And I just didn't like it anymore. And when I went to college, well, let me back up a little bit. My teachers in elementary school, junior high school, they had always suggested that I study journalism, that I always had a good writing capability. I never took them seriously, and I just started taking other classes in general. And then I came across a political science class. I fell in love with it, and I just studied political science. But I still had that writing bug in me. And I remember I read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky. I was doing a study abroad in Havana, Cuba. And after I read that book, I said to myself, I could do this. I could write. I know I could. And so I just started writing ever since then. And I haven't turned back since.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
So that's how that came about. So I've written maybe about 7 books already, but only 3 have been published. I can't release them all at the same time. So I have plenty of material in the works.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's already done. I wrote a screenplay for my book, A Grave Situation. It's getting translated in Spanish as we speak. And so I think after I'm done with the documentary, then I'll just focus on the screenplay and either try to sell it or try to... I mean, maybe I'll take a stab at directing a feature film because I'll have experience directing this documentary as well.
I got my 8x10 right here.
All right. You ready? Yeah. I was going to cast you in it anyway, so...
Again, doing it, dog.
Yeah, but what's up? What's your process? Like, how do you... When you wake up in the morning, do you write? Like, in the morning, like, there's some comedians out there that hit a big old bong rip and listen to Louis C.K. and then start writing jokes. I mean... There's people who do that. There's people who actually sit down and watch, listen to Richard Pryor for an hour and then try to be creative and original.
I get tired, bro.
But that's, I'm just making, talk about comedians that I've seen do this. But that's it, for real. They hit a big bong rib, listen to Hannibal Buress, and then write jokes.
Yeah, no, I don't do anything even closely related to that. every book that I've written or everything that I write has always been in a different setting. The first book that I wrote, I did it while I was living with my sister and all my nieces and nephews, so they were always just running around, and I just put on a headset, listen to classical music, and just type away. One of my books, Grave Situation, I wrote that one in between classes. Another book I wrote while at my job, working in the insurance industry. So it just all depends. Right now I'm writing an essay for the film Dark Progressivism. It's following the history and trajectory of dark progressivism and basically laying the outline for the school of thought that this concept is. And I usually write in the morning and then sometimes in the evening. So just all depends. I don't really have to look for inspiration. All the ideas are always there. It's just discipline. Yeah, just sitting down and actually writing the stuff.
Yeah, can you explain dark progressism for us? Because besides me,
turn on the lights.
We got people out there who are just Googling that shit right now and pressing pause.
Say, can you say that? What's it called again?
Progressivism, bro. Look it up, please.
En el oscurito. It said about real fat fools. Yeah, on the inside now. It's tricky. People, they say about fat fools. ¿Qué comes en el oscuro, güey?
Yeah, man. You get inspired. You're working with heat.
Yeah, there's a group of writers always at Starbucks, huh? I got to beat the heat and be right here with next to the AC.
I write better when people are looking at me.
You creep.
Okay, I'm back.
What's happening, dog? El tocayo.
So what's up, bro?
Yeah, right, explain to us about dark progressism.
Dark progressivism. You forgot a few letters.
Yeah. Dark in your homes.
Well, the concept of dark progressivism, it came to me from going to lectures, going to galleries, going to museum settings, and hearing some concepts that I would hear people talk about, artists, art historians, and so forth. And I started seeing two common concepts in what people were talking about in relation to their work. And I saw how that reflected my work as well. And the first one was dark. And that aspect of dark refers to what I like to call the bleak, somber, and unsettling complexity of the urban environment from which we came from. You know, you guys grew up in East Los. You guys were talking about people getting shot, like in the hood, in the daytime, and so forth. And those kinds of social conditions only are only experienced in the kind of environments that we grew up in.
Yeah.
And so we tap into this kind of background, not necessarily to inspire the work that we do, but we have no control over the kind of work that comes out because you're naturally going to be influenced by these types of things. And the concept of progressivism comes from the knowledge, skills, and abilities in one's own work to help improve the human condition and do forward-thinking concepts in their work. And so that's what the idea behind dark progressivism is.
In all mediums, not just one art.
Yeah, I'm trying to... I don't want to... Sometimes when people have seen the trailer, you know, they think that it's about lettering or they think it's about graffiti, but it's not. It's a variety of mediums, and this is an assessment to some extent on Los Angeles nativist art. You know, people that grew up in these kind of environments that do these kinds of things, but at the same time, they've ruptured from concepts of what people think they're supposed to be doing. You know, just because I'm, you know, I look a certain way or I have certain color skin, that I always have to talk about a specific narrative in my literature, but I don't. And some of these people don't do it when they're painting or when they're doing murals or when they're doing photography or whatever other kind of mediums they choose to do. It's just breaking from those norms and traditions. And that's where the rupture comes in regards to the film.
Orale.
Simon.
Dark progressivism, homie. Raza.
Dark for something, right?
Algo así.
Yeah.
Those letters get dark to me, man. Isms. Nah.
Yeah.
How do you get, Juan Carlos, like, do you get labeled as Mexican-American artist, Juan Carlos Munoz? Or do they just charge you?
Well, you know what? I was just talking to Rodrigo about that. I mean, I don't even like that word Mexican.
Or they call you Rodrigo. I'm Mexican artist Rodrigo. But, you know, but there are people out there who aren't even as good as you guys, but they're just called artists.
No, pues yo me considero mexicano. Pero, yeah. You know, that, the thing is that when you move to Venice, like when I moved to Venice, you come to such a colorful place, man, that you just stop being... You just become human. So it's one love, you know what I mean? It's one love, it's one blood. One, you know, we all bleed the same thing. The only difference is our fingerprint. You know, we shed from the same place, we bleed from the same place. And I think, you know, all humans are beautiful, man. There's that one spot that's there. But still, the word, when I moved over here, one problem that I had is with that word Mexican. I feel that was a racist word. I was like, got into some shit with, you know, I was like, I don't like that word, man. It's Mexicano, but I'm...
But when you say it, it sounds like Webback.
You know, so I'm like...
But now, Mexican, everything goes, like, loud. But you kind of
like,
stop.
It's the same thing, like, when you call a Jew, you damn Jew, but you're a Jew. You take offense to that because the way he's saying it, so he really saying, you type motherfucker. And they say Jew or he's Mexican.
Or say, you know, Larry, the Jewish guy. Or, oh, yeah, Larry, the Jew. You're all, damn.
Oh,
did you just say, what, my grandparents didn't burn him or nothing. It's like, I'm chill. He just happens to be Jewish, that man.
Well, I want to add something on there because I've been doing a lot of research into the history of L.A. And historically, the word Mexican has always been associated with vagrancy or deviance. And so that's why when people say it, it just has that negative connotation. And by identifying with that specific label, it's already provincial and it's already regional and geographical and limiting. You know, so if you automatically say, well, I'm a Chicano artist or I'm a Chicano writer, then that's it. You know, you're not going to go anywhere beyond that. That's what people are going to associate with the kind of work that you do, and they're going to expect you to write those kind of narratives. So I look at artists, for example, one of my favorite writers has always been Albert Camus. He's French, but he actually, theoretically, I mean, technically, he's not French. He was born in Algiers, and he's half Algerian. Well, actually, he was born in Algeria. His mother was Spanish. His father was French, but he's remembered as just being a French author. So is there a possibility that I'm probably going to remember as an American author? Or are people just going to say, oh, he's a Mexican-American author or he's a Mexican author? So those are things that we're trying to shatter with the concept of the film as well. It's just leave me alone and just let me be a writer. That's basically what I want to be.
So what you got coming up next?
Well, we currently have an Indiegogo campaign where we're asking for some donations for the film. We still need some money to help complete the film.
Give us that webpage.
Yeah. Let me take a look here. They can look up Dark Progressivism at Indiegogo, or there's also a Facebook, Dark Progressivism on Rupture and Rebellion. There's my publisher has a website, which is steampresspublishing.com. And I think those are a variety of different sources, you know, where they can look for the information. And if they can share the link as well, we have about 7 days. You know, we're not really close to reaching our goal. So hopefully people can donate. We also have a current exhibition in Chinatown, which Juan Carlos Munoz Hernandez is a part of as well. It's called Devil's Town. And same thing, the concept looks at the name of Los Angeles, which was kind of given and playfully and also inadvertently, and to attack the city because between like around 1850 to 1880, it was the most lawless city that they called west of Santa Fe, and even west of the Mississippi, there were murders being reported daily. People were getting lynched and hung and so forth. There was a lot of social banditry, which was basically that the Mexican American and the Mexican didn't want to assimilate into the dominant culture, and so people called it Devil's Town. So Los Diablos or Devil's Town, and that's what the exhibition is about. We asked artists to explore their own relationship to the city in regards to Devil's Town, or maybe some of these ideas in regards to racism or violence or street gangs or whatever they wanted to, whatever it meant to them.
So that'll be from now to August 30?
Yeah, it's August the 30th, and some of the proceeds go to the documentary, to the completion of the documentary.
And what's your Twitter or Instagram? People get to get a hold of you?
I don't think I have one.
It's 2014, homie.
Yeah, I know. But there is one for I have a blog.
Write it down.
I have a blog. It's called the Westsider Blog at WordPress.com. I think there's a Twitter for it. I don't really manage it, but there is, I think, a Twitter for Dark Progressivism. If they just type it in, I think it comes up. I'm not sure. I never go on there.
Google it, folks. Google it.
I only go there for the ladies.
Yeah, if I spend my time on that, I'll never have time to do anything else.
Oh, exactly.
I won't be able to finish a book.
I know what you mean. I go from Instagram and then back to Pornhub, and I lost 8 hours.
Right on.
And a wrist.
I had a joke for you. I don't know if it was going to be funny, but I was going to say I go from Instagram to Golden Grams. And that's it. And I do something else.
I like that one.
I was serious.
In between, with another gram or something.
A little Grammy gram.
Yeah.
So what's your Twitter, Juan Carlos Munoz? Instagram?
No Twitter. Just this.
Heaven, right? Instagram.
Heaven.
Heaven with no profile photo.
It's a heaven at a...
Give me a little sketch.
K2S underscore or something like that. I don't really know that whole language and stuff. But
I think it's heaven underscore two.
Heaven underscore K2S.
Yeah, heaven underscore K2S.
Yeah, keys to success.
So where are most of your art right now? You have art.
Well, I've been. You know, like right now I'm kind of out of materials, so I am doing a lot of walls kind of out there. I just recently did one at Huntington Park with my good friend David Savior, and it was at a Christian center, and they're called, I believe, it's Street Gospel. So they do a lot of reaching out and stuff. They do a lot of good work there, a lot of good prayer. But this is like the second consecutive year I do a mural with my son. Last year we did it on Father's Day.
Oh, you have a son?
I have like a few. No. I got my beautiful boys, Carlos Jonathan. You know, he's 23, and Justin Angel, 21, and my beautiful daughter, Maya Luna. And I'm in love with all three of them. See, so I've been doing murals. I've been trying to reinvent myself all the time, man. I have this cubism, and now I have this other linear work, and then today I did a fork I sculpted a fork for my daughter. She's that, so I'm gonna make it into bronze, and she can have her own little fork to eat. So I'm just, you know, and now I'm here, you know, doing art with you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I tell my friend, you know, you don't need a spray can. You don't need this. You just walk down the street and look at the shadows of the trees, and you could just do art with that, you know?
I know, man. That's what I did. I just got a little recorder and I started a podcast.
There you go. Ahí está.
The What's Up Food Podcast. Our 12th episode, right? Our 12th episode. Oh, this might be the 12th, huh? We're gonna put it out this week.
Okay, cool. I wanted to tell you.
We have our second biggest listeners are Amsterdam.
Oh, dang.
We have 132 listeners in Amsterdam.
Home of the red light district.
We got more listeners in Amsterdam than we do in Mexico. And Cudahy. We have that listeners in Riverside, holding it down with two people. Pico Rivera.
Tampico Rivera.
Yeah, man, we try to on our show, we really don't know, like, where our podcast is going right now, but we do have a lot of good guests. You guys are good guests, our youngest guests.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
And our people that listen to our show, they love meeting new people. They want to know what they're up to. They love the stories about somebody rising from the ground up and people doing positive stuff, like Rodrigo here is. And you want to tell people something, Rodrigo, that people are listening to get into film or art, how they could get by it, and what they could do, you know, even if they're not going to college, how could they get started, you know, in doing something artistic to get out of the hood? Whether it's what would you give somebody advice who's just starting off right now, whether they're 50 years old or 20 years old, that wants to get into the arts?
Well, the first thing that I would say is you have to be self-motivated and you have to be disciplined. With so many tools out there right now because of the internet revolution and
distractions.
You can buy books on anything. How to this, how to that. You can
Google that shit now.
Yeah, you can even YouTube it, right? And you can change your transmission if you YouTube it. But if you have any, I guess, inclinations towards becoming an artist, whether you want to write, whether you want to direct, whether you want to paint, you know, there's a lot of resources out there that people can tap into. So my advice would be to stick to it, and to push yourself and be self-motivated and discipline yourself to actually do the work. People always ask me after a book signing, you know, what would you suggest to an aspiring writer? Well, you should write.
Fool.
That's what you should do.
Hell yeah, write.
Get them keys, dog.
Yeah, the ideas aren't going to write themselves. Nobody's going to write it for you unless you're going to be one of those writers that hires a ghostwriter, you know, and then you're never writing your own material. But
like Anne Rice.
They do that?
Yeah.
That's like, how it's done, big dog.
I've been asked to ghostwrite as well.
But ghostwriting a lot of material, man.
Put that on my resume, dog.
I'm a fucking idiot then, man. So a person like me, just say if I have money, a lot of money, I could just hire a random writer to write a book and put my name on it?
Yep.
I'm going to write two Harry Potters when I get home.
Yeah, think about it. Somebody that has a lot of money, they just, like, just 100 grand.
I want
to be like, I'm going to pay you 100 grand, and you just write a story for me, and, you know, you let me put the name on it.
Provocative tale.
Yeah, yeah. And then,
a coming-of-age tale.
Yeah, exactly. And then you write it for them. And they take the credit for it. So
ghostwriter the whip.
But then they won't get recognition. Maybe some writers, you know, fear that they're not going to get recognition anywhere else, and they just want to write the story for somebody else. I guess that's fine. I mean, I don't have anything against ghostwriters. But
I got my condo and my tea. I'm happy. Well, thanks for being a surprise guest, Rodrigo Torres. I mean, I'm sorry.
Rivera de Ebro.
Rodrigo Rivera.
Torres is my tocayo, right?
Tocayo right here.
What's up?
What's happening, dog?
All right.
And you wanted to say something real quick?
Yeah, I just want to also say we have that show, Bridging Homeboy.
Hold on, man. There's a guy here trying to start a Honda.
the Weekend Warrior Club right here.
You say Breaking Bad?
Trying to throw that Kawasaki out there.
Not Ricky, man.
Mickey Thompson. Oh. Is he warming it up or what?
No, bridging. Que se vayas Breaking Bad.
Suddenly making eggs.
Ride it like you stole it, man. Get out of here.
Un pinche cuate.
Go ahead.
Well, no, nomás quiero hablar de... we had that show at Otis. I had a show with Fabian Deborah and
you went to Europe Kizu. With him, right? Fabian?
No, that must have been the other Juan Carlos.
Oh, the other Juan Carlos.
My twin. No. Yeah, Fabian's, man. He's been all over the place, man. That Fabian. Said Fabian, Cemento, you know?
Cemento. Yeah.
You got to go visit him pretty soon, too.
I should.
You know? You gotta go visit him. But también, I wanted to talk about the show we had at Otis, and it was through.
Where's Otis?
Otis School of Design, right here off of. It's close to the airport. It used to be at Otis Parsons. It used to be over there by MacArthur Park, but now they're over here by the airport by LAX off of Lincoln Boulevard. But we had a show there, and it was called Bridging Homeboy. And again, it was kind of this whole thing, you know. It was before, you know, meeting Rodrigo, and it was like we're kind of lining up in the same plane as far as dark progressivism, and so it's been going on for a while, and so anyway, the show the show got picked up, and it's gonna be we're gonna be showing it at Rafma. And that's a museum in San Bernardino. And going to be in October. So they picked it up. So now it's a traveling show. And it's going to be the same works, you know. But we're going to try to put some new stuff in there. And
where in San Bernardino is that?
Cal State.
Okay.
Cal State San Bernardino. Yeah.
Right there off the 215 off University Drive.
You went to the university, huh?
It's my alma mater, dog.
¿Qué vole? ¿No que no?
Coyotes right there in Mexican travel agents. The mascot. I forgot what the name of that library is, but it's a new one. It's after I went there.
Yeah.
When they started donating money.
Oh, okay. I mean.
When is that going to be?
This is going to be in October.
October.
I believe October 4th. I believe that's the day that they're going to show it. So it's going to be there for like two months or 3 months. And it should be a good show. And I'm really happy that the museum is opening up its doors to us, you know, and really seeing the vision that through all of us put together, it's coming forward and it's being a progreso y para adelante. And through Annie Buckley and again Father Greg, and not only that, but I also want to give a shout out to your jefita, you know what I mean, Felipe. I mean yours, man. Pero because they did a lot of struggle, man. They have a lot of pollas in los pies, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah,
all
man.
That walking and shit.
My mom had a lot of walking looking for my ass. My mom used to go look for me when she was pregnant. I visto chojito.
Ah,
dang.
Love,
you know, so
still love crack.
and también I want to give a shout out to all my good folks. I know I see them, I don't see them around, but you know, people there from the projects, you know,
they're in the Pico Aliso Village,
Pico Aliso,
on Facebook.
The picnic, and then Aliso. of course, I mean Gary Hearns, you know, we just lost a brother. He was always smiling, man. Big old, he was a big old teddy bear. Always smiling, and you know, I would have never want him getting on the bad side though, because you know he do something else. But yeah, he was always smiling, and you know, I pray for his family.
It was crazy how growing up when we were second grade with Ms. Huckabee.
Yeah, Ms. Huckabee.
And then remember those times that we couldn't go outside for lunch because they were shooting outside.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We just
yeah.
say, "Oh fuck it, we're gonna play kickball in the gym."
Remember that? Were you there when remember Ronald Reagan got shot? But we're in the sixth grade by then.
Yeah.
Remember that, Mister? It was kind of weird. It was like, damn, you know.
They shut down Boyle Heights.
Big Mama.
Oh, Big Mama. Which Big Mama? There was three Big Mamas over there.
No, that was there used to be this lady, and she's a volunteer at elementary school, and all she did was get those cardboard trays where the food would come in, and she recycled them.
You just take them?
So she's like, give me that tray. Just dump the food and keep the tray and then go recycle it. But she had like leftover food and like, can I have that cupcake, Big Mama? Did you say, may I? And I said, may I? And then she gave me an extra cupcake. Well, thank you very much for being our guest, Heaven. Juan Carlos Munoz Hernandez.
Gracias a ti. Thank you, Felipe. It was cool, man. You know, I got to tell you something. When you told me you wanted to do this, you know, I really felt comfortable because we both fucking, you know, we were both there, you know, through childhood. I've known you for over 30 years, and you know, it was good. I felt really comfortable. I didn't feel like, you know, I could, you know. Fucking just kick back.
Who showed up with Chef Fruit ready right here?
Oh, yeah, homie, I want to give a shout out also to Muhammad. Muhammad, he cooked this great food for us. And, you know, there's
thank
still
you,
some,
bro. I'm a vegetarian. I'm a vegan, bro. People don't believe me.
You don't eat fish?
I don't eat no fish, no meat, no fish. Lard. I don't look like it, but yeah. I eat a lot of Oreos.
Are you really Palestinian? Huh? Are you really Palestinian?
I'm Moroccan.
He looks Mexican today.
Yeah,
so what you got going next, man? What's the future for Heaven?
El futuro.
That right there. That new right there.
Yeah. That's
that a big ass piece.
That piece is going to a museum. Actually,
where at?
Right there at Cal State.
Okay.
Pero esa piece it se llama Progreso y para adelante. You know, and I stay with the shades, but there's still some. Kind of, I would say, undercover, symmetrical street E in there. You know what I mean? If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I can see that you left the green right there, like for the projects.
Pecan Park, fucking Murillo's Tortas right there.
Murillo's Tortas. There used to be this lady when we were kids. They used to sell Murillo's. It was the only Mexican-owned store. And this lady would be there, like, changing her baby's diaper and making you a torta at the same time without washing her hands. Like, she's lifting the baby's legs up to wipe his ass, and she's making a torta with the other hand. Con chile or sin chile. Yeah, give me a torta and some baby powder. And a Springfield grape soda.
Give me another soda and I'll give you some baby wipes. Damn.
So what's up, fool? All right, man. If you got listening, I'll be at... have a schedule here. Okay, I'll be at September. I'll be in Merced, California. Visalia, California. And the Atlanta Punchline. In October, I'll be at the San Antonio River Center Comedy Club. And Los Angeles and Pasadena, I'll be at the Ice House. In a couple of weeks, I'll be in Las Vegas. I'm hosting the Tejano Music Festival. And on Sunday, I'm doing my own one comedy show. That'll be August 24th on a Sunday. You'll see it. For all the information, go to www.felipesworld.com. What's up, fool? We got Rodrigo Torres here holding it down, sitting like Chavo del Ocho on that hardwood floor.
Indian style.
Looking like fucking Kiko over there.
And I'm not drunk. Hit me up on Instagram, Twitter, Rodrigo Torres Jr., Facebook, that shit.
He's single, ladies.
Hell yeah. You can catch me behind a merch booth. We go all the way to size XX and women's. Hey, man, but it's a real pleasure to have you guys and be around you guys and hear you guys' stories, man. Yours is an artist, and from, you know, street to canvas to sculptures. You know, from the bottom up, from getting shot in Lenox with the Smith T-shirt, dog, to laying it down with this documentary with dark progressivism. So it's a pleasure, man. Respect.
Thank you. Thank you, Rodrigo.
You're one of the little kids growing up again. Fuck you, rocker!